Today on the TV Time Machine, we welcome Malcolm McDowell, the star of Mozart in the Jungle. Mr. McDowell is a legendary actor who starred in such films as Oh Lucky Man, A Clockwork Orange, and Time After Time. Over the next segment, Malcolm McDowell will talk about his Golden Globe-nominated series, Mozart in the Jungle, whose second season is now available for streaming for Amazon Prime members. Again, for those of you intrepid enough to listen to this interview time after time, feel free to do it like clockwork as we say Salieri to the past in order to properly compose ourselves in the present. Malcolm, thank you for coming on board the TV Time Machine.
Great pleasure to be with you.
Tell us about your character, Thomas Pembridge, and what's coming up in the second season of Mozart in the Jungle.
Well, you know, let me just lay the foundations. You know, it's basically about an orchestra, and we take a little peek under the curtain and look back into what's happening in the orchestra, you know, when they put the instruments down, when they've played their piece and they're packing up, ready to go home, and the rehearsals and all the shenanigans and the politics that go into the thing, the funding of it, the union that they have, and the breaks they can have and can't have. And well, in season two, the orchestra are preparing to go on strike. That's one thing. I hope I'm not giving anything too much away. But and I play Thomas Pembridge, who is the... We start off at season one. He is the leader of the orchestra, the conductor, and they bring in a new, younger conductor to. My character is kicked upstairs as the artistic director, who's on the board of the orchestra, and you know it sets up this great conflict with Gael Garcia Bernal's character. And, you know, not from him so much as from me, because I play a, you know, petulant narcissist, basically, who's a child, who's a brilliant man, but, you know, throws his toys out of the pram and behaves like a, you know, six-year-old when he doesn't get his way, basically. And he's a rich and wonderful character because there's so many inconsistencies in his makeup as a human being, which is, of course, a delight to play. And so the second season, Pembridge has been away on sabbatical, has come back, determined to write the great American symphony. And he thinks the work, he's on fire with it, and he's really excited. And he's dying for the new maestro, Gael's character, to listen to it and to put it on the program and debut it with the orchestra. But unfortunately, we find out that it's not as good as he thought it was. I'll just leave it at that. And, you know, listen, he's disgraced himself by, you know, drinking too much at one point. He goes on the wagon, absolutely nothing, and, of course, falls off, slips off, and... you know, all things like that are happening. And so it sets up for some great and funny adventures.
Well, of course, last year, Thomas and Rodrigo, most of the season you guys were having a lot of conflict. At the end of the season, you sort of buried the baton, as it were. So in this season, what is the relationship now between Thomas and Rodrigo?
It's become a mentor. I've become his mentor, really, in many ways, and his great supporter on the board, which is a real switch, you know, which is fabulous. And so happens in life, you know, that you're vehemently this way and then vehemently the other way. It's just, you know, it's sort of amazing and very believable, I think, because when you really look at it, you know, there are very few conductors. It's a very small club. And really, they know what each other is going through. So in the end, when the crap hits the road, they stick together.
Right. I mean, the two men, they're both geniuses, I guess, in their own ways.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, but they're complete opposites. What do they share in common?
The music. The music is what they are passionate in their lives about. Everything else is secondary. Relationships, everything else in their life comes, you know, really second place to the music and the work. Because the music is their lives, and they are interpreters of the greatest pieces written by the greatest geniuses that the world's probably ever known. You know, up there with Shakespeare, Beethoven, you'd have to say in the same breath, you know, Beethoven, Mozart, Bach, all these extraordinary geniuses, and you wonder how the hell they did it, you know, centuries ago. It's just mind-boggling, really, and how beautiful the music is and how it's lasted and how it's affected everybody. You know, Lennon, McCartney included, you know, the Beatles owe such a debt, you know, to classical music. And I think Paul's father was a band leader, you know, a sort of swing band and all that. But everything is connected. You know, it all comes from, tribal music, you know, originally. But it's lovely to see this sort of progression. And, you know, if we can just bring a few young people to classical music, then, you know, we've done well. I mean, we've opened up the eyes of young people to other options besides rock. And I'm not saying you don't have to like one or the other. You can like everything. I do.
Right. Right.
And just to have the option sometimes when the mood gets you to put on, you know, an aria when you're driving the car and just listen to Pavarotti or something, blast out some wonderful piece. I mean, it sends the chills up you, actually. But you have to be in the mood. You know, my kids roll their eyes, you know, oh, Dad, don't put that on. You know, and, but I do occasionally slip in a piece of, you know, Beethoven or something. And,
well, how can they not be excited by Eine kleine Nacht or something like that, you know?
Oh, exactly. Yes. I know. I know. It's hard for kids because they're brought up on this music, and some of it I really don't get at all, you know. But then that's what my parents said, you know, when the Beatles came out.
That's
so
right.
I feel like an old fuddy-duddy, really. And I got to be careful because that's exactly my father, when they came on television, he'd go, look, why don't I get that bloody haircut, you know,
right.
or something like that, something and, absolutely
and,
inane.
And now, that hair seems short. You know, in retrospect.
Yeah, that's right.
So
true, but then, that was a real statement of intent.
Right.
That told everyone that, hey, we're different, we're rebels, we're not going to do what you want, we're not going to conform. That's what it told us, and that's what excited us.
So of all the amazing characters that you've played over the years, for you, what makes Thomas Pembridge so unique and special?
Well, I just love his inconsistency and the fact that he wears his emotions on his sleeve. You know, he'll snap from one thing. I mean, and also he has tremendous vulnerability, you know, because really underneath it all, he's just really running scared, and he's terrified of really old age and coming to the end of the line, you know. And I think he feels, he looks over his shoulder, you know, and even though he's had a tremendous career, great honors, and he's still really, there is this little child inside him. And occasionally it comes zapping out when he can't help himself. And, you know, he twangs off on some emotional thing and where he really should just shut his mouth and sit down. But he can't help himself. And also he feels, you know, they've brought in a younger guy who's brilliant, played brilliantly, of course, by our leader, Gael Garcia Bernal.
Right.
And he, of course, he's threatened. He's everything, as any human would be. And so, you know, he just kicks back and fights and screams and shouts. And and you know, and thoroughly makes a, you know, a real nuisance of himself. But ultimately, there's still this love of the music, and in this season, he becomes sort of a mentor, you know, to Gael's character, Rodrigo, and it's rather nice the way they come together, and there's a wonderful, some wonderful scenes, actually, and the most enjoyable scenes, I think, because he's such a wonderful actor. So when you get, you know, a couple of good actors together and they're really with some good material, then all bets are off, you know. It's just, wow. You don't even notice the time, you know. It could be 5 hours we're shooting a scene and it feels like 10 minutes. People go, well, it's lunch now. You go, well, lunch? Good God, what's the time? Oh, it's 5 o'clock. You know, that's what they do on TV. You know, you have lunch at 5 o'clock because it always has to be 6 hours after the call. It's so weird sometimes. Sometimes you'll be having lunch at, you know, I don't know, 7 o'clock in the evening when it's really dinner, but they call it lunch.
So, Malcolm, where can people find out more about yourself and Mozart in the Jungle on social media? I believe you have a Twitter account?
I have Twitter, I have Facebook, I have all that, and invite anyone to come join it, and I will try to respond if I can. And you can find Mozart in the Jungle on Amazon Prime. We open, our second season is available to screen. You can binge screen the whole thing, season one, season two. I'm telling you, once you start, it's like a Mars bar. Yes. You have to finish it. You have to go all the way to the end.
Well, your show is not only a good show, it's a great show. And Malcolm, it's been a tremendous pleasure having you aboard the TV Time Machine. Feel free to join us again in the future or in the past.
Will do. Thank you so much.
I was born Mary Tyler Moore.
Is Jesse Donald Knotts.
Fred McFeely Rogers.
Leslie Moonves.
Isabel Sanford.
Leslie Renee Stahl.
Robert Edward Turner.
Regis Francis Philbin.
Aaron Spelling.
Since 1999, the Archive of American Television has been preserving the memories, knowledge, and insights of the men and women whose talents and vision have helped shape this remarkable medium. Over 500 video interviews with these TV legends are now available on the Archive of American Television website at metvlegends.org. There, you can sign up to receive news, updates, and also become a sponsor to help preserve television history for generations to come. That's metvlegends.org.
The mythological proportions of Star Trek provide something that's missing in people's consciousness, psyche.
The Archive of American Television, capturing television history, one voice at a time.